Good afternoon. Come on, what's a response? Good afternoon. Are you guys awake? All right, good. I just want to make sure everyone's awake and alive and all that other good stuff. So I just want to acknowledge my co-authors on this, Donald Tyler and April Timmons at DePaul University. I'm at the University of Michigan School of Public Health in the Center for, what is the name of our center? No, the Sex Lab, which is a center for sexuality and health disparities. And then also folks from the National Runaway Safe Line, which are Jennifer and Gordon. So I have nothing to disclose. There's nothing I want to tell you about. Background, a little bit of background information, and folks probably know some of this information. When we talk about runaway and homeless youth, about 1.2 to 2 million youth are homeless every year in the United States, and about 6.4 to 7.6% of youth in the United States between 12 and 16 will run away from home. Now, it's tough when you look at those statistics because people define running away differentially. Some statistics look at more than one night away without parental consent. Others look at extended time like that. But generally, we're talking about a relatively large number of young people who end up on the streets. And one thing we see is that these bouts of homelessness can go anywhere from a day or two to a couple months to years. And depending on how long youth are on the street, they may have various involvement with the sex industry, with drugs, with other delinquent activities, things like that. There was a recent lit review by Edison et al. That looked at a number of studies and looked at the impact of the chronic stress of being on the streets and what impact that had on physical and mental health, and showed that the longer kids are on the street, the longer or the more severe the outcomes. And they even found differences in like neurocognitive development and other factors like that. So we've known for a long time that it's dangerous to be on the street, but now we're getting more recent evidence that the effects are more long-term and more serious. So there's been, in the past 10 years, there's been a number of reviews that have looked at interventions for runaway and homeless youth, both domestically and globally. And some of the reviews have kind of critiqued current interventions in terms of seeing that a lot of them are only based on one geographic region. So it'll be a study done in one city or another city, sometimes two cities, limited outcome measures, also some lack of interventions for preventing youth from running away. We talk about youth that are already on the street, but prevention studies, and then also ones that provide a range of psychosocial support mechanisms. Also, these reviews have really shown the importance of the family and the critical role the family play, both in the intervention studies, but then also in longitudinal studies or cross-sectional studies. Family comes up over and over again as a critical factor. And also returning to the home of origin. Now, that's you need to keep in mind, if they're coming from an abusive home, that may not be the case. But family reunification does seem to have a positive outcome for youth. So basically what this study is about is doing an evaluation of a program called the Home Free Program. And it's a family reunification program run by the National Runaway Safe Line, which used to be the National Runaway Switchboard. They just recently changed their name. The presentation will focus on describing the program, then looking at some of the outcomes related to family dynamics. And although in the larger evaluation we had data on both youth and the parents, we're just focusing on the parents for this. And also, to just let you know too, this isn't based on a large NIH study. This is really a program evaluation that was initiated by the agency, by National Runaway Safe Line, saying we've been doing this for a while, we want to know if it works. And so it's really about coming in, working in a collaborative manner with the agency and doing an evaluation of the program on a very small budget. So the method. So the participants for our study, we looked at families who received services in 2011 who were part of the Home Free program. We had phone numbers for 313 parents or guardians, we were able to reach 141 of them. We, after five calls, we stopped because, again, we were dealing with a very small budget and a relatively short time frame. We reached 141 parents. And 107 agreed to participate. Some just refused to participate, and others felt that they just didn't really were kind of not in a place where they could participate. But the vast majority did. So the children of the parents and guardians were about 57% female, 43% male. Age range was 14 to 20. You can see the mean and median there. The youth had been living away from home for a range of times, which we were actually glad to see this, not glad that so many kids were out on the street for a long time, but glad to see that we were able to look at families where kids had been out on the street for a longer period of time. It ranged everywhere, anywhere from less than 7 days, and that was about 14%, all the way up to 365 days or a year. And just over half had been on the street for 60 days or more. So we're talking about kids who have been out there for a relatively long time. We're not talking about kids who ran away to their friend's house and then came back. And so that graph there shows you the range. Also, we had pretty good coverage. So the parents were from 33 different states, representing all different geographic regions. The National Runaway Safe Line is the national call center for RHY programs funded by the federal government. So the number is 1-800-RUNAWAY. So anyone anywhere in the United States can call, and they have services that are linked to them in their specific region. And the four states where we had the largest were Texas, California, Florida, and Michigan. So a little bit about what the program is. The program was actually started back in 1995. It's a public-private partnership between the National Runaway Safe Line, or NRS, it's a lot easier to say that than say National Runaway Safe Line over and over again, and Greyhound. So Greyhound actually gives free bus tickets to youth who are participating in the program. So since its inception, over 14,000 youth have been reunited with their families. The program provides crisis intervention and reunification services, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. For kids that are 18 to 20, they can actually go to a transitional or independent living program. Under that age, we can only give tickets that take them to their parental or guardian home. And NRS also provides resources in the community, so there's ongoing support. They also do follow-up afterward to make sure that the support is being used. So the way that it works is this is a youth empowerment-focused program in that the youth has to initiate it. So it's different than other programs where parents say, I want my kid back. The kid is on the street. He or she makes a phone call. A crisis line worker talks to the individual. They go through a 5-step trauma-sensitive solution-focused intervention model that we use at NRS. The second is then they do a mediated phone call with the parent or guardian. So the parent or guardian's on the phone, the youth is on the phone, and the trained crisis worker is on the phone as well. And so through this mediation process, then they make a decision that the youth is going to go home. And so then at the end of this process, the line worker goes through and summarizes what's happened in that interaction, the solutions and agreements that were made, and then a bus ticket is issued and also food vouchers. The crisis line worker also provides additional resources, again, that are geographically specific because the database has resources throughout the entire United States. And then after the child has arrived at the home, the crisis line worker calls to make sure that the child actually made it home. So what we did in this analysis, it was a mixed methods approach. It was all done through phones, about 15 to 20 minutes for the complete interview guide. So we had some quantitative measures, some qualitative. Qualitative, we looked at family dynamics both a month before the runaway episode, a month after the runaway episode, and then at the time of the call. Now, the calls took place between February and July of 2012, and they had to have received services in 2011. So there was some variability in the amount of time it's been from when they received services to when they got the call. Quantitatively, we had some family dynamic questions that looked at the sustainability of the intervention. We also then used some scales, they came from two subscales of the family functioning scale by Bloom and Bloom and Nahr. There are 15 dimensions of family functioning, so we looked specifically at expressiveness and conflict. And then we also had some quantitative youth outcome measures that were asked of the parents about their youth's behavior. So the results. So the qualitative analysis, we used a phenomenological framework and approach to analyzing our data. We had two analysts that looked at that, and we came to consensus on all those, on the coding and the analysis. The quantitative data is mostly paired samples. Reports. We also wanted to look to see what kind of impact it could there might have been from based on the amount of time the kid's been on the street. Since we had everything from less than 7 days to more than a year, we wanted to look at that. So we actually did some split sample analyses to see if there was a difference. And also, since we had the age range all the way up to 20, some of the kids were minors and some weren't. So we also wanted to look to see if the younger versus older. In terms of the qualitative, we looked at, again, this analysis is really focused just on family-related factors. So in terms of the family dynamics, there were five primary themes that came out when the parents talked about their relationship with their child both before and after the intervention. So, you know, some of them are pretty obviously they're physically reunited with the youth and the family, and I'll show you some quote about that. Also, the intervention helped to set expectations for returning home. It opened lines of communication. It also facilitated appropriate dyadic communication, and by appropriate, we're talking about productive dyadic communication. A lot of times there's communication, but it's more yelling or, you know, someone calling their mom a bitch and then they're calling you lousy brat. We wouldn't really call that appropriate. And then the last is the increased awareness of each other's perspectives, which was really powerful for some of the quotes. These are just three of the quotes. The first one, they, NRS, helped me get my son home when I didn't have a way to get him home and I didn't know what was going to happen. I'm glad you, the service was there. And a lot of them talked about that they were at a point of desperation. These are families from a range of income ranges, but a lot of the ones just had no way. The kids had no money on the, when they were in the street. The parents had no money to bring them home. The second one, it let us speak more openly. It helped, like, if he didn't understand what I was trying to say, the person, NRS, would help him understand by saying it in other terms, and the same with him. It was very helpful. And so there they're talking about the mediated crisis call that happens with the three. And then it, the Home Free Program, helped because it showed her that I was more concerned than she probably had assumed, and it showed her that I was there for her. And it showed me as well that she wanted to come home. It put us back on the page that we needed to be together. So in terms of some of the quantitative data, in terms of family communication, when they rated the scales, and again, this is all retrospective, and I know there's a lot of challenges in this. Again, this isn't a big, you know, RCT or multi-million dollar NIH grant. So these are all the parents' retrospective self-reports of what happened. So we recognize all those limitations. But when we look at when they report on family expressiveness and conflict pre-intervention and post-intervention, we see with expressiveness, post-intervention it went up. That's the direction we wanted, that they had a greater degree of expressiveness, and conflict went down. When we did the split samples, there were no differences at all. So for the younger and the older, we saw the same effects, and for kids that were on the street for longer periods of time and less periods of time. This was another measure that we created and looked at changes in the resolution of the issues that led to the runaway episode. So here we have on this side the issues resolved after 1 month. And then the issues resolved at the time of the interview, and again, that's the differential length, but some could have been up to a year. And so I highlighted the ones in the middle. It shows that the effects were very well sustained, especially if you look at the number that were completely resolved 1 month after. When we look at if they were still completely resolved at the time of the interview, the vast majority still were. So a lot of them did talk about that they felt like the issue had been resolved either mostly or completely, and we were able to sustain that. Now, these are changes in the youth outcomes. So again, these are parents reporting on changes they saw in their youth both pre-intervention and post-intervention. We looked at alcohol, tobacco, unprotected sex, fighting, breaking the law, and then running away. And so the darker bar means that they engaged in less of that behavior. The middle is the same, and then more. And again, we see across the board, not as much for tobacco, but we did see that there were changes in what the parents reported their behavior. So just to kind of wrap this up, I think that the Home Free program we see as an innovative program that's really based in a youth empowerment framework, and it's moving from parents forcing the child back into the home to youth that are on the street making that decision. And we find that a really critical element of the program and that's initiated. Also, the approach that we use is really addresses the fact that these kids are traumatized. Many have been traumatized before. When they're on the street, they're traumatized again. And so we're very careful about the approach. The counseling approach is based by trauma-informed approaches to counseling and to crisis intervention. And I think that again, is really critical. We often don't look at the fact that I think sometimes with kids that run away from home, it's more, oh, you're a bad kid, you ran away from home, not realizing the level of trauma that these youth experience. And if you're going to yank them out on the street and make them stay at home, that approach is not going to be sustainable. And we really have to address the issue of trauma quite a bit. I think, too, that you know, one thing we saw, and I'm not reporting on the youth data, but I think the youth actually appreciated the fact that it was their decision and that they felt they had power and control throughout the whole process. And it was never, again, a forced issue. It was really a collaborative issue, which I think makes a huge benefit. Also, the resources that are provided, too, make sure that once the youth is back home, that the parents and the youth have access to resources. So we find if they need counseling resources in their community, if they need assistance with food, if they need assistance with housing, whatever they need assistance with, because we have such a huge national database, we're able to link them to services across a range. I think one thing that we see is that this is a very cost-effective approach. All the crisis line workers at NRS are volunteers, so they go through an extensive, more than 40-hour and then supplemental training afterward training program. We do have paid supervisors, but the vast majority, we have well over 150 volunteers who are there 24 hours a day. Also, Greyhound has engaged in this partnership as part of their public service community work, so all those tickets are free. So we don't pay anything, the youth doesn't pay anything, they get a free ticket and a free food voucher when they're on the bus. So in terms of cost effectiveness, I think it's an extremely cost effective model. I think future research, we need to look at longer term effects of this and then other family reunification programs. Also, I think that we have to think about making sure that when we're developing these programs that we're really developing them with youth at heart. This program, is, like I said, it's been going since 95. It's changed over the year based on youth input because the agency from the very beginning, even before I did any work with them, always collected youth data and youth input and put that into the way they use the program. Also, the fact that it's coming from the community, it's coming from a community-based organization as opposed to a researcher, I think has a huge impact as well. And we need to look at indigenous programs and homegrown programs and see how we can bolster those and make them better instead of really working to come up with lab-based studies and then impose them on communities. And I think this is a really great example. Again, acknowledging we have a lot of flaws in terms of the scientific value of that. We don't have a control group. We don't have tight controls. This is retrospective self-report. But I think it does give us an indication that interventions like this are cost-effective. They're sustainable. It's been going on since 95, and it's still going strong. And I think that we can learn a lot from what's actually happening in the community and then see how we can help to form partnerships to make the programs better instead of imposing interventions onto communities. Thank you.
So again, we've got, in this case, actually quite a nice, generous amount of time left over for questions, so I think we can easily take a couple of questions before moving on to the last presentation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. We did not look at that. And part of why we didn't is we had a hard time because a lot of them had multiple reasons. And almost everyone, because we tried to do categorization and family dynamics came up in every single one. So we did try and look at that a little bit, but we weren't able to categorize them well enough that we felt like we could do that. But yeah, but that's we thought the same thing. Yeah. Right. Yeah, we don't have, we did look at that specifically. I know from just working with the agency for years that that we definitely do have that situation, but we, trying to think if in our demographics, I think we asked it, but we didn't look at, I don't think we didn't have that many, but that definitely is a case where that does happen, because one of the services that we do help them access is child care services. So, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. What happens in, is that during that mediated kind of crisis episode, the crisis line worker tries to assess as much as possible if the home is adequate. And again, but that's hard to do because we're in Chicago and they may be in, California or somewhere else. So they do that as much as possible, and then they do, it's based on whoever has legal guardianship. Now, there were some situations where the parent or legal guardian said, I can't provide the best home. And so in some situations, we were able to provide them with another home that was agreed upon that would be an appropriate setting. But some of that had to do with the age, so we couldn't do that for anyone under the age of 18. So it gets a lot trickier. It's a lot easier for 18 and above because there's transitional living. But there were some situations where, and I didn't know all the specifics of how they would do it, but they were able to get them to go with another relative. And that was agreed upon with them, and then also with, I think that in those situations we had to get caseworkers and child welfare involved. Yeah.
A little bit more programmatic. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, NRS does a lot of advertising, so they have a website. They also go to a variety of mostly practice-based conferences. And so really they try and disseminate all their programs. So there's also a runaway prevention program they have, and they have a variety of different services. So NRS does, you know, kind of multiple methods and strategies to try and put it out there. If there's agencies who want to connect with NRS, they would be more than welcome to do that. And I, and if you need any contact information, I can connect you with either the ED or the director of programs. Because again, they want this service to be used by as many people as possible. Yeah, so the number is the 1-800-RUNAWAY, and so it's actually, it's in advertisements, it's all over. We actually, years ago, worked with Ludacris, who's a musician, and there's a song called Runaway Love, so our number was in that. We're also working with Cyndi Lauper right now in the her campaign. So we try and then, NRS also partners with other organizations to get the number out there as much as possible.
Great.
Thanks.
Very